You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
To the right side, play action fake to Brown, Moule on a roll, downfield wide open, it's the record for G. Roy Simon. He has caught Milt, and Simon says he's the all-time CFL pass receiving leader. At the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone, touchdown Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup!
What's going on, CFL fans? Welcome to episode 138 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you by Metal Rocks, original handmade one-of-a-kind jewelry made right here in BC. Check out their link on our website and see all the great custom pieces they have to offer. I'm your host, Brian Warishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. The time for talking has ended, and the BC Lions have to beat the Saskatchewan Roughriders this weekend at BC Place, or their season is in serious jeopardy. We'll talk frankly about what we think is wrong with this team and the reason why this game is as close to a must-win as you can get for the Leos. Off the field, the Lions are facing challenges as well, and the man whose task it is to solve those challenges joins us tonight. BC Lions President Rick LaLisher steps into the den to talk about the business side of the football club. We'll also talk some Riders with Alex Dormuth, one of the co-hosts of the Piffles podcast, another fine show in the Canadian Football Podcast Network. But Mojo Kemp is back this week, so let's bring him in and get into it. Whether we want to or not, Mojo, welcome back. Sadly, we're talking about a BC Lions team that is still not very good right now.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Brian. Thanks for downloading the show, folks. Jeez, Brian, what can you say other than here we are, 1-5, but we're ready to turn this thing around. How many times do you think Lions fans have yelled out, remember 2011?
Well, I'll tell you what, that this is not the 2011 team, for one thing. That team had depth, and they just weren't playing well as a unit. They added a couple pieces and got rolling, but I don't see that with this team, and I think if we're banking on that, we're going to be sorely disappointed. So here we sit at 1-5, coming home to what may arguably be the Lions' season on the line. Yes, they wouldn't be mathematically eliminated with more than half a season to play, but they've already lost the season series against the Eskimos. If they lose Saturday, they'll have lost the season series with the Riders. They've also played more games than all the teams in the West who have already had byes. They're not going to catch Winnipeg. Calgary, I doubt it. Edmonton has owned them this year. They would have to finish ahead of Edmonton and Saskatchewan in points or hope to go east in the crossover, which is no guarantee, especially with the way Montreal is coming on in the East. Sure, there is a chance until there isn't, but those who constantly comment about 2011 need to realize that was a different team that had depth. They brought in one or two pieces to complement that, and they were able to play like they should have. This team doesn't have that luxury, Mojo.
Arlen Bruce must still be out there somewhere. I know he's a big...
He's concussed.
He's concussed. Hey, it looked like... you know what, man? It looks like a lot of the Lions are concussed. You know, Brian, boy, none of us thought that this year was going to go this way.
Nope.
Man, we're just stuck between a rock and a hard place. And man, what can you say, right? What can you say? We just gotta keep fighting, folks. Gotta keep on fighting. That's all we got to do.
The problem with all of this is that it's not a tweak here or a tweak there to fix all of this. There's so many areas of this team that need addressing, and there simply isn't enough talent out there to fix it quickly. You know, they may fix a few things, but this team doesn't have the depth to sit there and say so-and-so isn't doing the job, so we're going to sit him and bring in this guy we have on the practice roster who we think is ready. They're bringing in some guys. NFL cuts are coming, but you know, what will their record be by then? Will Mike Riley even survive that long? Do they have the cap space to make big changes?
I don't believe that they do. So obviously somebody's going to go. I'm surprised that somebody, a regular starter, hasn't been cut already just to send a message along. Like, you know, there's no way that they can sit in the locker room and look at each other and say, you know, this is good enough. There's no way they can think we're good enough. We just haven't gelled yet.
Well, we've talked about it all season, and really there isn't much more to say about the offensive line. Of course, you add insult to injury when Joel Figueroa and Suk Chung, the two all-star caliber guys on that line, missed last week because of injuries, which again identifies a lack of depth. David Foucault and Brett Boyko are struggling as tackles. Charleston Hughes owned both of them last week, and the inside guys have been switched up so much that there's been no cohesion there. I don't know what else to say, Mojo. We keep saying the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, I was telling the lovely Susie out there before we came into the studio here that, you know, if I wouldn't have been able to make it tonight, you could have just picked any of our shows and just sort of replayed our section. Maybe that speaks to us as podcasters more than the Lions. But, you know, they're not really giving us a whole lot to talk about, Brian. I prefer to, when I get behind a microphone here at a podcast, I try to be positive, man. I try to make this experience the most positive part of my day. And boy, the Lions are not making it easy.
And as much as we've talked about the offensive line, the defensive line is failing us as well. Only the Montreal Alouettes have fewer sacks than the Lions, who only have 7. Again, having played more games than many teams as well. Odell Willis should not be your best pass rusher that you have at his age, and he certainly can't do it all by himself. They've tightened up their run defense, but there's still been breakdowns. Again, a lack of depth here, and at this point in the season, there aren't any difference-making players to be had.
Rolly Lambala. That's all I got to say. Bring Rolly back.
He's not a defensive lineman, though.
I get that. I get that, guys. But, you know, it hasn't been the same since Rolly's been gone. You guys know I love me some Rolly.
Linebackers, it's the same thing. They let Micah Awi walk, who looks damn good in Toronto right now. Big heel, I'm hearing, wanted to come back. They couldn't afford him, and they said they weren't interested. Same with Solly. You know, the problem is they didn't go out and find other guys to bring in who can step in and play. Where's Adam Konar? They signed him when he was released by Edmonton. He's barely seen the field. You know, linebackers are another big area of concern.
It always comes down to, for me, in those situations, Brian, why did the player get released from his team?
Well, in most cases, it's money. But.
And why is it money? It's because the brass doesn't think that you're worth the money that you were getting. Maybe, and you know, I don't want to throw young Mr. Konar under the bus, but boy, you know, it just seems like maybe they were right. You know, how many times did we see Wally get rid of a guy who we thought, hey, this guy still got some gas left in the tank, only to find out that Wally was right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's injured or not. I'm not even sure if he dressed last week. I know he was on the depth chart, but, you know, when Maliki Harris went down, they didn't throw in Adam Konar, so I'm not even sure if he was dressed. They put in Guzilak Messam instead. So I don't know what's up with him, but it's just odd that he hasn't seen the field, especially with the problems we've had in our front 7. I think some of the breakdowns in the secondary can be attributed to the lack of pressure up front as well. I know that group has enough talent that if they got some help from the front 7, they'd be generating more turnovers and there'd be fewer big plays against.
You can only cover for so long.
Yep.
You can only cover for so long. And if the opposing quarterback's got all day to throw the ball, even you or I could find an open receiver if we have all day.
Now, in no way am I suggesting Devon Claybrook's job should be on the line. He deserves time to turn this around and build his team. But he does have a young staff, and there have been times when the Lions just don't seem to have the ability to adjust, or they're not executing those adjustments. The second Edmonton game was a prime example where they basically had a carbon copy of the first game and they had no answers for it. Then there was leaving Mike Riley in the game last week, another one where he was getting beat up, especially after having his leg rolled on late into the game and seeing him limp off the field. In fact, they challenged that play and sent Mike right back out there. Claybrook stated he wanted to pull him out, but Mike refused, saying he wanted to battle with his teammates until the end. But Mojo, I'm sorry. At that point, as a head coach, you have to live to fight another day and make the decision for him. No one is going to think anything less of Mike Riley if he comes out of that game.
No, I mean, the coach has got to be the boss. Now, we love Mike Riley because of the fact he doesn't want to come out of the game. And we get that. We all get it, right? We love Mike Riley because of that. But, Devon Claybrook, at least in my opinion, has to say, hey, you know what? You're coming out, man. Sorry, that's the way it goes. I'm the coach. It's my call. Mike Riley has taken more punishment than any other quarterback in the league, in the league's history, after six games.
Yeah, it's been pretty brutal. And you're right. Devon Claybrook has to put his foot down there and realize that, look, if Mike Riley goes down, we can definitely kiss the season goodbye.
Maybe it's because of his hat. Maybe because his hat was crooked, he couldn't take him out of the game.
Well, yeah, I'm sure somebody's blaming him for that. Lost in the fact the Lions lost another game this week is this. They did rack up 460 yards of offense despite the pressure Mike Riley was under, 122 yards along the ground. If they clean up the missed tackles, improve Riley's protection, keep establishing the run, cut out the turnovers and penalties, and finish drives in the red zone, this team could actually do some damage. Just imagine how much offense they could put up if Riley actually had time to throw the ball. So it's a big game this weekend, and if they want to have a chance of climbing back into a playoff spot, they need to win this game, in my opinion.
This is one of the earliest must-win games I think I can remember.
Yep.
I've been a season ticket holder, I think, since 2003 is what it says on my ticket. And I can't, maybe, again, I don't want to keep harking back to 2011, but maybe this is the earliest must-win game we've had since then. Obviously, it is.
Okay, let's move on now and talk a little Riders, who, of course, defeated the Lions last week in the first game of this crucial back-to-back. Alex Dormuth of the Piffles podcast joins us now to talk about this week's opponent. Alex, thanks for your time tonight. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on. This is great.
This two-game set between the Lions and Riders is a pretty crucial one, more so now for the Lions after losing the first game. What are your thoughts on last week's game and the Riders' performance last week?
For the Riders, I thought the first half was pretty blah. It wasn't a good half for either team. They looked like they were two, of the worst teams in the West anyway, that it was just, it wasn't that good of a game. Marcus Seigpen, obviously, his touchdown at the end of the first half there to get the Riders back into the game. That was kind of the turning point in the game to me.
Yeah.
We got to keep in mind, this was a close game going into the final minute, 2 minutes of the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Riders seemed to find their groove there for a couple drives and, ended up making the game 38-19 towards the end of the game. And it was kind of a runaway from there. The Riders' defense really was the key to this game. Charleston Hughes was everywhere, 10 tackles, 3 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. Just getting the pressure on Riley, I think, was the big key for the Riders' defense. And they did enough to kind of slow down the BC offense, who, still put up almost 500 yards of offense,
but
just couldn't just drive.
Yeah, that was unfortunate for us, for sure. Now, everyone knows what happened to Zach Caleros, and personally, I hope he decides to retire for the good of his own health and future. Cody Fajardo has been pretty good for the Riders. What are your thoughts on the quarterback situation there? And is Fajardo the real deal in your opinion?
Well, when it comes to Zach Caleros, I'm with you. I think he needs to step away from the game as a player. Maybe he can be a good coach. Who knows? His family needs to sit down and talk to him. I know it's hard for any professional player to admit that it's over, but you got to look for your long-term health here. And it's a scary situation when you've had 6 concussions over the last, 2.5 years. He needs to step away. In terms of Cody Fajardo, I think I'm not going to anoint him as the next one here in Saskatchewan like a lot of people are. I'm very pleased with how he's been, able to perform outside of the Calgary loss a couple weeks ago. But the teams that he's played well against, Toronto, BC, and I call them pretenders, the Ottawa Redblacks, they're really not that, they're not playing good teams. The Riders haven't beaten any real good teams right now. Toronto and BC are a combined 1-10 right now. It's a good step, but I want to see what Fajardo can do against, you know, an elite team, against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, against, you know, the Calgary Stampeders again. And there's steps there for the Riders. He might be the next one, but I'm not ready to say that just yet.
Hey, Alex, well, I just want to let you know that the Lions have now got everybody right where we want them. Overlooking the Lions, and that's how we came back in 2011. But hey, man, speaking about the BC Lions, there's a couple former prominent BC Lions, now members of the Riders, and of course we're talking about the Manny Show and Solomon Elamimian. How are those guys fitting in with the Riders, and as a fan, what are your expectations of those two guys?
Well, we'll start with Solomon Elamimian here, and I think we were pretty disappointed with him in his season debut against Calgary. He just looked like he was invisible and just had to knock the rust off. And this last game here against BC, he was a lot better. The thing is, with this defense that the Riders have, they have a lot of stars on this defense. They're not looking for Elamimian to be that elite middle linebacker that he used to be in BC. He doesn't have to be that guy anymore. As long as he's just being a solid player, that whole defense is going to be fine, and he'll look good because of that. I've personally expected a little bit more out of him, but as long as he's not making mistakes, I think that Elamimian will be just fine. As far as Manny Arsenault, we weren't too keen on the signing to begin with, just obviously coming off of an injury, but we actually talked about this on the Pipples podcast this week, that Manny and Naaman Roosevelt, the veteran receivers on the Riders here, they're going to take the attention of opposing teams' defensive backs. And that's going to open up things for guys like Shaq Evans, Kyron Moore. And if you look, Shaq Evans is third in receiving this year, and he's finally hitting the end zone. He's making big plays. He's looking kind of like a number one receiver, but he's not going up against the number one defensive backs. And Manny Arsenault is always going to command that attention because of his history, because of how good he's been. And I mean, obviously one catch for 5 yards is not what anybody envisioned, but this isn't a guy that has to go out and carry the team to 150 yards and 2 touchdowns every week. Arsenault will be fine. I think this was knocking off a little bit of rust, and he's not going to put up 1,000 yards by any means, but he'll still be, think of like G-Roy Simon when he was with the Riders in 2013. It's that veteran presence. He'll make big plays when he needs to, but other than that, you're not going to get a whole heck of a lot from him.
It was reported on Monday that the Lions have signed former Rider defensive back Cresden Butler. Alex, what can you tell us about Cresden Butler?
Well, the last couple of years, Cresden Butler has been one of the better defensive backs in the league. He just was never talked about, and that's a good thing as a defensive back. It means you're not getting beat. But there's also a reason why he couldn't crack the Toronto Argonauts roster just a couple weeks ago. I think he's done. He's still a solid football player, but he's not going to be that elite talent that he was. Is he going to give you guys, you know, some inside information on the Riders this coming week? Maybe, but I don't really see that happening too much with him. He'll be a solid acquisition for sure, but I wouldn't expect the world out of him.
What player on the Riders has been a pleasant surprise for you this year and someone Lions fans should watch on Saturday?
You know, the one player that I'm kind of really impressed with that isn't getting a lot of the glory stats or, you know, a lot of attention on him is Cameron Judge, linebacker. He, especially when Solomon Elamimian was out, he was playing very solid. This is a guy who's just in his, you know, second year as a starter here. And Sam Hurl's nowhere to be seen. Sam Hurl is injured, but Cameron Judge is kind of taking that spot away from him in the roster anyway. Cam Judge, he's a good football player. And I see a lot of Mike McCullough-isms in him, but he's a better talent than Mike McCullough was. And Rider fans will know how good Mike McCullough was for this team. That's what Cameron Judge is.
Where's the weakness on this Riders team, and what are your concerns going forward this season?
For whatever reason, it's the defensive backs. I couldn't tell you. And you look at the names that are lined up there, Nick Marshall, Ed Gainey, Mike Edom, they're good defensive backs there. For whatever reason, they're not performing. Luce Purifoy had the interception last week, but they're giving up a lot of yards. And I think teams can exploit, especially a new guy like Solomon Means on the other corner spot. For a secondary that nobody was really concerned with, that's been our biggest issue this year.
Alex, Mika Johnson is one of the best interior defensive linemen in the league, and he takes on a lot of double teams. Mm-hmm. But he's been off to a bit of a slow start by his standards. What are the thoughts in Rider Nation on his play this year?
Well, I think at the beginning of the year, everyone was kind of wondering where he was. He's the highest paid defensive player in the league, reportedly, but he's not getting any of the stats. He's drawing up a lot of double teams. Where you're going to see him is it's making Charleston Hughes get one-on-ones, and Hughes is going off. Had another 3 sacks this past week, has 8 this season so far. He'll get his. Micah Johnson will get his. And it's just a matter of getting one-on-ones. He's just facing too many double teams in the middle. But that, ideally, that's what you want from a defensive tackle, is to take on those double teams and have your edge rushers go out and get the quarterback. So I don't think we're too worried about Micah Johnson, but we would like to see more, you know, the glory stats, the sacks out of him.
Attendance is down across the CFL, even in the mighty Mosaic, at least on TV. We're starting to see some empty seats, Alex. What do you think's going on?
It's just the way of watching sports nowadays. It's so much easier, and the production on TV is better. You can have, you know, more people at your house and watch on a great big TV. It's too expensive to go to games once you include, you know, a ticket and, well, if you have to park, that's what, $30 at Mosaic Stadium, if you can park around there. And it just costs too much. And to feed a family of 4, if you want to take your family of 4 out, you're looking at a couple $100 just for tickets, and then probably another $100 just on food alone. And it's too much for a night out. I think the scheduling has a little bit to do with it as well, especially here in Saskatchewan. Our summers are so short as it is. And to have all these home games on Saturdays at 5 o'clock or 8 o'clock, nobody wants to come back from the lake and watch a football game. They'll stay out there in September, in, you know, late August, going into September. You'll see a lot of the attendance, and across the CFL, they'll jump a little bit, but our summers are so short that people want to take advantage of it, get out to the lake and not be stuck in the city. And it's tough for out of towners here in Saskatchewan. And that's just the way that pro sports is right now. It's not the go-to destination that it used to be. You can watch it on TV. You can have your phone on you and follow fantasy. That's just the way things are now.
I say this kind of tongue-in-cheek, but the Riders mascot Gaynor has been taking some heat this year, including last week when he got a little personal with a stuffed lion. What are your thoughts on that? And did Gaynor cross the line last week?
I just thought it was awkward that he spread the lion's legs open before he grabbed them. That was just awkward to me. I don't know what he was trying to do there. I mean, he's been beaten up on other like teams, stuffed animals and tigers and lions and horses for the Stampeders. He's been doing that for 30 years. So this is nothing new that he's going out and kicking it and throwing it around. Just that awkward spreading of the legs things I thought was a little weird. I thought it was great that BC Lions social media guy tagging PETA in the video. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, a lot of people thought they were serious about that. But
yeah, got a lot of people riled up. And apparently Gaynor has been disciplined by the team, by the Riders, and he's had his stuffed lion taken away. So I don't know. Maybe he should appeal it and he can get it back for like 32 days.
Yeah, like you said, that stuff goes on all the time. But I think maybe he just crossed the line a little bit there. Lastly, Alex, like the Lions, the Riders have a rookie head coach this year. Your thoughts on the job that Craig Dickinson has done, especially considering the tough spot the team was left in with the sudden departure of Chris Jones?
Well, at first when they hired him, it seemed like it was a convenience hire. Then you started hearing from him and listening to his interviews and seeing how he interacts with the team. And at practice, he's not just, you know, with the special teams. He's not just with the defense. He's everywhere. He's with the offense just as much as he is with the other facets of the team. This is the right guy for the job here in Saskatchewan, and he'll get there. There's growing pains. He's kind of stuck without a legitimate starting quarterback right now, and he's got to kind of overcome that, and he'll get there. Same with Devon Claybrooks. I think he's a good coach, and he'll be good in BC once they get their thing figured out. You know, once he straightens out his cap, I guess, right?
Yeah. That's I know clearly affecting his ability to coach.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's Craig Dickinson's going to be a good head coach. Is he ever going to be as good as his brother? Maybe not. It's hard to tell right now. But for what the Riders have right now, and it's a good change from Chris Jones, who is very defense-oriented, it's a good fit for the team.
Well, Alex, thanks for joining us tonight. Before we let you go, give us your prediction for Saturday and let people know where they can find the Piffles podcast.
Well, you can find the Piffles podcast anywhere you find your podcasts. Just search Piffles podcast. We're on Twitter as well, at Piffles Pod. Predictions of the game. I don't know if I'm a good person to predict this because I actually had BC winning both these games because I just have seen this story from the Riders too many times that they play up and play down and to their team, to the opposition. But BC's O-line and they have more injuries on there this week. That's tough to overcome for any team, especially against a team like the Riders with Charleston Hughes, Micah Johnson, Zach Evans, AC Leonard. Those are four all-stars. It'll be a closer game score-wise than this last week, but I do have the Riders winning by about 5 points.
All right, Alex, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you down the line.
Great, thanks so much for having me.
All right, on the field, the BC Lions are struggling, but they're also struggling getting fans into the stadium. While winning would help that, there's so many other factors in this market that make a tall order to turn things around. Rick Lalisher is the president of the BC Lions, and it's his job to try and get things back on track on the business side of things. He joins us on the line now. Rick, thank you so much for taking the time with us tonight. We're happy to have you join us on the podcast.
You're welcome, guys. Look forward to it.
Rick, you've been on the job for about a year and a half now. I remember when Bob Ackles came back for his second stint, he was quoted as saying that he didn't realize how bad things were here. What have you learned about Vancouver as a CFL market, and are the challenges you're facing bigger than you expected when you took the job?
Yeah, I don't know if it's bigger. I expected differences, and there clearly are differences. And I think one of the challenges you have here in BC is that there's a in the summers, we all know, and we've learned, my wife and I have learned, there's lots to do here in the summer, and it's very difficult to get crowds, and that's why I fought so long and hard with the CFL to make sure that we had five games after September 1st rather than five in the summer and four in the fall. So I think it is a different market. I tell a lot of people Edmonton is a sports town and Vancouver's a jump on the bandwagon and an event town.
Yep.
And so there is clearly a difference.
Attendance seems to be getting a little worse, but as you say, there's a lot of things going on in the summertime that are keeping people away. And of course, winning would certainly help get some people back into the building. The Lions have tried to come up with some affordable packages to get families into the building. They've created the party zone and the end zone, which seems to be popular. What more can be done in regards to getting fans back into BC Place besides winning football games?
Well, winning certainly helps, as you say. There's no question, and we're struggling right now, but we're still confident that's going to change. But I think we're doing a ton of things. This Saturday with Saskatchewan here is our family day. We've really pushed hard on the things that we're doing with a 4 o'clock start. It allows people from the island to come over and still be able to catch the last ferry back. But we heard a bunch of that last year from the island people. But we've created a ticket for kids 12 and under of $10 per game. You can't get a better deal. And for our family day this year, we're doing some things like we have for the first 3,000 kids that come through. We've got a great looking BC Lions lunch bag. It looks great, and we're pleased BC Place partnered with us to be able to do that. And, the other thing that we're really pleased with for anybody that comes through the gate, will after the game, we're going to send them an email with a promo code that will get them into the P&E any day during the P&E fair that's on for free.
Oh, nice!
And so when you think about it, that's really a great value. So we're looking at doing a number of things like that. We also have for this family day, we have the superheroes here. With grandkids, I know a lot about Chase and Sky from Paw Patrol. And they're going to be here and out on the Terry Fox Plaza before the game and then around wandering around the concourses during the game. And we have Spider-Man and Iron Man. And we also, working with the Family Channel and the CFL, we're going to have the American Ninja Warrior Jr. inflatable obstacle course over in our kid zone that we moved this year between gate C and D, giving the kids a lot more opportunities. So there's a lot of things for families. That's what we've worked hard at. And the 4 o'clock start, you can get home early. And if you don't have a family, you can come to the game, go have dinner, and then stay for the fireworks on the Festival of Lights. So a lot of things happening this Saturday, and we're pushing hard on trying to create extra value for our ticket holders, whether they be a season seat holder or a casual seat holder.
Hey, Rick, perception is everything, and the Lions and other teams in this market struggle to get the coverage that the hockey team gets. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. But do you feel the team gets enough media coverage in the city? And do you think if they got more, it would help? It would help with attendance.
Sure, definitely, it would help more. You know, it's no different here in Vancouver as it is in Edmonton, and I think most of the CFL cities with the hockey team. Clearly, hockey is 1 and 1A, and maybe 1B. But more coverage certainly would be better. I know the downside of that, the media, whether it be print or electronic, they're struggling a bit in their industries and have downsized quite a bit. So, but clearly any additional coverage we can get would be very helpful.
Rick, could you explain to our listeners how much the Lions rely on ticket sales? Given that TSN money each team gets, and if anything can be done to make games more affordable, we're starting to see teams like the Eskimos adjust their midseason ticket pricing in effort to boost attendance. And I don't think a lot of people know that the BC Lions don't get anything from the concession sales at BC Place.
Yeah, I certainly learned that when I came here. It's a big difference to Edmonton. And with the Lions case, there's really four revenue streams. There's, of course, ticket sales. There's our partnerships and sponsorships, which we've done quite well at and have some great partners here. There's merchandise that is a little bit of revenue, but not a lot. And then there's the CFL revenue. And as you say, clearly the majority of the CFL revenue comes from the television contract with TSN. All other teams either run their own buildings or get a cut of the concessions. And it's pretty substantial. I know in Edmonton it was over $2 million a year. And so that's clearly a challenge we have here.
So is that a non-starter with BC Place? I mean, there's no negotiation that can happen where the Lions might get a cut, the Whitecaps might get a cut of, you know, the revenue that they're bringing in? Or?
I guess, Brian, over time, we have a license agreement now that goes for another 4 years with BC Place. And I know they've got a revenue challenge as well, right? There's only so many events there. Yeah. You have to keep a pretty strong infrastructure there in order to be able to do the concessions. And I think my experience so far with Center Plate and BC Place, they do a pretty good job considering the number of nights they have in a year at that stadium.
Now, you mentioned the folks on Vancouver Island, and that's one of the most frequent comments I get on social media, is that, you know, what can the Lions do to make games more accessible for fans on the island who have a really tough time attending games without having to get a costly hotel room in addition to their ferry costs? Has the team tried to work with BC Ferries and maybe a downtown hotel to make it easier for fans on the island, maybe come up with a package, you know, not only for people on the island, but, you know, in other parts of BC as well?
Yeah, including the Okanagan and Kamloops. We've got some great fans in Kamloops because having a training camp there and the island, we've tried to create some packages and probably can do a better job at that. Truthfully, and I think something like the 4 o'clock start really helps, and having games on Saturday really help versus Friday or Thursday.
In Edmonton, I believe fans have tickets to the game who they can use public transit to and from the games. Has the team tried to get a similar deal with TransLink here, or maybe buses that leave from pub partners around the Lower Mainland?
Yeah, we're doing some buses now. I'd like to do more. We've done a little bit with TransLink. Again, I'd like to do more. I think if we looked at all the sports teams, maybe going together would be beneficial. But anything you can do like that, we've done a bunch of surveying of our customers, and that's about 40. I think it's about 40% ride the SkyTrain or a bus, 40% park and come in, and the other 20% walk or ride a bike or take a taxi. The SkyTrain's a very big link to both BC Place and Rogers Arena.
Hey Rick, a lot of the fans in Y section where I sit, section 210, by the way, if you ever want to come down and say hello. A bunch of us were talking about Mr. Braley, and we were just wondering, we know he had some health issues a while back. We were just wondering how Mr. Braley's feeling these days.
He's doing pretty good. I talk to him every couple of days, and you know his health's getting better when he gives his opinion about the way we're playing. So in some ways, I appreciate that. He went through some very challenging health things, but every day you can hear it more and more in his voice that he's getting stronger, and hopeful by the Hamilton game that we play in, I think it's August 10th in Hamilton, that he'll be able to come out and see the team play, and hopefully we play a heck of a lot better than we did last year when we were there.
The new jerseys came out, and they look pretty sharp, but the Lions made some tweaks to both their home and away jerseys. And the fans' jerseys no longer match the players' jerseys and are going to be relaunched after being fixed up. Do you have any timeline on when we could expect a relaunch of the fan jerseys?
Saturday night.
Oh, this weekend?
The inventory's here.
Oh, excellent.
Some of it. So it'll be out this Saturday. I think we've got a lot of great positive comments on our new jerseys that we tweaked a bit, and both home and away, and a lot of people love them, and I think they look a lot better.
Yeah, I love the road jerseys. I'm generally a guy that stays away from white, but I'm going to pick up one of those road jerseys for sure. And the helmets are awesome too. Well, Rick, I have to ask you this one, and I'm hoping you can clarify for our listeners, because last game on a beautiful summer night in Vancouver, the roof was closed for the game, making it rather uncomfortable in the stadium. What goes into the decision to open or close the roof, and who has the final say? Because I know prior to the season that you pledged that the roof would be open as often as possible this year.
Exactly. And I feel that way, and I want it that way, and I hope to keep it that way. That, in my mind, the football should be played with that roof open unless there's really extreme extremities. And the process is, on the day before the game, we give BC Place an initial analysis of what we've looked at in the weather and say we'd like the roof open. And I think we've said that every game, and we'll continue to say that. We then make an official request in the morning of the game, which we did. And unfortunately, in this case, last game, the BC Place, in monitoring the weather, felt that there was a over extraordinary chance of some moisture coming. And of course, we all know it didn't. And it became very frustrating, not only for you guys, but for me. And I took them outside and showed them the blue sky. And we're going to keep every game trying to, we want that roof open.
Okay, so last weekend it was a BC Place decision to close it.
Yeah, the final decision is theirs. Of course, they own and operate the building. And, but I think they've agreed with us that they're going to work with us and try to do the best they possibly can.
Good stuff.
Hey, Rick, before we let you go, we're looking for a scoop here. When can we expect the Lions to bid on another Grey Cup? Are we looking at 2022 after Saskatchewan and Hamilton have hosted?
Yeah, that would be the next one available. As everybody knows, in 20, it's going to Saskatchewan, 21 going to Hamilton, and I think it's, we'd love to take on 22. There's the CFL's changed their process a bit and now require bids, and we're, you know, I'm not saying we're going to officially, but we're doing some preliminary work right now and getting ready for when the CFL call for bids for 22, and maybe it'll be 22, 23. I'm not sure yet, but we'll be in the mix.
Well, Rick, I really appreciate you coming on tonight. I know from our conversations in the past, you're working really hard to fix things off the field. And as fans, we really appreciate that. I also appreciate the willingness of the club for letting us participate with you, and hope we can continue that relationship. All the best, and we look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
Okay, thanks, guys. Look forward to it.
Well, Mojo, Rick Lelicher certainly has his work cut out for him, but he's brought in some good changes, and I know he's committed to the task at hand and will do his best. If the team could start winning, it would certainly make his job a little easier, but it's a tough market with a lot of complex issues.
Yeah, you know, Brian, I think he's probably got the toughest job in Vancouver right now, trying to turn these Lions around. And, you know, the media doesn't make it any easier. I'm sure if we turn on the radio right now, we'd be listening to the fourth line choices of the second pairing of who might be the right winger on the Canucks next year. And there wouldn't be no talk about the game at all, especially now with what was their show? Third and Out, the three down radio. Three down radio being gone. Basically, all we have now is Farhan, and Farhan does a great job. Farhan, you know, I boo you when I see you on the field, but it comes from a place of love. And but yeah, I wouldn't, as much as we always think, yeah, man, if I ran the team, I don't think I want Rick Lawlisher's job right now. There is just so much stacked against him and the things he can do. Can you imagine, folks, how frustrating it is when you have to ask an outside entity, can you open a roof on a day a football game is? That's got to be so frustrating for him. No cuts on the concession, no cuts in parking. You know, the Lions lose millions of dollars that all the other teams just get.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the media again, but I was driving home today and they were actually talking on the radio about how hard it was to fill their shows in the summer. And I'm thinking to myself, you have a football team here. You have a soccer team here. Just because there's no Canucks news doesn't mean you can't talk about them. You know, it's just like, it boggles my mind.
Don't we have a lacrosse team as well?
Lacrosse team. Well, they're not playing right now, but.
Some can argue that neither are the Lions playing right now.
Yeah, but, you know, like the Lions practice today. So send somebody out there and set up a studio. They do it all the time for other things. Send somebody out there, set up a studio and you know, talk to some players, talk to Coach Claybrooks, cover the team. If you got nothing to talk about, there's two other teams in this market right now that would die for the coverage. They would love to have the coverage, but, you know, we just don't get it. And folks, you know, that's why this podcast exists, and we hope you enjoy what we bring to the table for you, because there's certainly a lack of coverage in this market.
You know, I'm sure if you go into any other CFL city, the coach, the assistant coach, somebody has a radio show mm-hmm. on their local radio, you know, the coaching hour.
I know, or they do in Edmonton for sure.
You know, in the huddle with Coach Claybrooks, or, you know, just something. And it, like you mentioned, man, it's mind-boggling that we don't get that here in Vancouver, that the Lions don't get that. It's almost like the radio stations around here want them to fail.
Well, and everything needs a sponsor this, sponsor that. When, you know, this is what our fans want to talk about. They want to talk about the Canucks. Well, you know, you're a sports radio station. There's more than one team in this town, and it would be nice if you, even if you don't have a sponsor, send somebody out to Surrey once in a while, sit down and talk to some players and create some interest in this team. And I know, you know, they'll tell you, well, it's not our job to promote the team. Well, it kind of is. You're a sports radio talk station, and you should want sports fans talking about all our teams, not just the Canucks. Anyway, we could go on forever about this.
Well, especially a TSN radio station, right? Yeah. They're basically talking up the team that is playing on the other sports channel.
Yeah, and TSN does have some great guys who really love the CFL, and Farhan's one of them, and I know, you know, Bob Marjanovic is a CFL fan. But I actually heard this week as well, the morning guys, Halford and Brough, saying they don't really talk about the Lions. They don't. I think one of them said they're a CFL fan. The other one couldn't be bothered to go to a game. I think it was along the lines of what he was paraphrasing there. But, you know, whatever. It's unfortunate, and, you know, it would certainly be nice if they got on board a little bit more. It's going to be a big game this weekend, and really for me, it's time for the talk to stop and this team to show if they have what it takes to turn this around. Your final thoughts as we wrap this one up, Mojo.
Well, Brian, it's like we said earlier, man, this is going to be a must win. The Riders always bring out lots of crowd. And, you know, Brian, I think that if the Lions crap the bed again this week, it is going to be ugly for the rest of the season. Well, you're going to kiss, you know, we'll never see 20,000.
Yeah, we heard Rick talking about how he worked so hard to get all our home games after Labor Day, you know, and not have people have to come in the summertime when they want to go out and do other things. The way it's turning out, this team could be out of it by Labor Day, and people won't come anyway because, you know, the Lions aren't in any kind of a playoff hunt. So
and you're
damned if you do and you're damned if you don't lately, and hopefully the Lions can start turning it around this weekend. But
and that'll really kill season ticket sales for next year.
Yeah. Well, that's it for episode 138. I want to thank our guests, Alex Dormoth of the Piffles Podcast and BC Lions President Rick Lalisher for joining us tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, Metal Rocks. Make sure to check out all they have to offer in the way of handmade jewelry, and you can find them on our website at bclionsden.ca. You can find a link there near the bottom of the page and check out what they have to offer. This show is part of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Make sure to check out all the great shows that are a part of it at cfpodnetwork.ca and follow the network on Twitter at cfpodnetwork. For more on this week's opponent, check out the Piffles Podcast at pifflespodcast.com. Please subscribe and listen to the show on your favorite podcast app. Visit us at bclionsden.ca. Follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at mojocamp, and on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. That's podcast, PAWDCAST. Until next week, I'm Brian Walrish, and on behalf of Mojo Kemp, enjoy the games this weekend, and as always, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.